Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
702.
The Naked Scientist.
Naked Scientist time. Dr. Chris Smith, happy Monday. How are you doing?
Happy Monday. I'm very well. How are you?
I am fantastic. And the questions have already started coming in. So let's get to the first one. Luke asks, what is it that makes the sound when a lightning strikes? The lightning comes with a thunder sound. What causes that sound? And why does electricity not have a sound even on high voltages?
Hi, Luke. Well, actually, electricity can have a sound on high voltages. As I experienced this morning, it was very misty here when I got up, and there's a pylon not too far from where I was walking, and the damp air around the pylon from the mist does cause the electricity to track across the insulators, these the things that dangle down from the arms of the pylon holding the wire, and you do hear a buzzing noise, and it's the electricity arcing because the water does provide some path off the cable onto the earth of the pylon. So you get this buzzing, crackling noise. And the power companies lose enormous amounts of electricity in wet weather, so they don't like the fact that the electricity does have a sound under those circumstances. But turning to lightning, lightning is made by tiny particles in clouds. These are called hydrometeors. They're ice crystals that bob up and down in clouds on air currents. And they rub up against each other. And as they rub against each other and jostle for position, it's a bit like you rubbing a balloon on your head, on your hair. The balloon gets statically charged and will stick to the wall. And the particles inside the cloud get statically charged, but for some reason we're not entirely sure about, the particles with one charge go to the bottom of the cloud, negative. The particles which have positive charge on them go to the top. So you end up with the cloud with a very negative charge at the bottom, and this has an effect of creating an electric field between the bottom of the cloud and the Earth's surface. And when it reaches a threshold level of a sufficiently high voltage, it will ionize the air, and that means rip the electrons off of some of the gas molecules in the air, and electrons carry charge. And so as a result of that, they can carry a current from the cloud down to the ground. And this is the flash of lightning you see. A thin tendril of ionized gas connects the bottom of the cloud to the ground, and the charge flows, and you sort of redress the imbalance that's there. Now, the current that flows when this happens is so enormous. It's thousands of amps of current flowing. It's discharging billions of joules of electricity in energy terms down to the ground. And when you have that vast release of electricity all within a fraction of a second, the heating effect is stupendous. The temperature of a lightning bolt heats the air around that tendril of electricity to 30,000, 40,000 degrees. And that's actually hotter than the surface of the sun, which is only about 5,000 degrees. When you put that much energy into the air, what it does is expand. Because gases, as you give them energy and make them hotter, they get bigger. So the gas around the lightning bolt gets instantaneously much, much bigger, and it expands so quickly that the air can't get out of the way fast enough for the gas to expand, and it creates a shock wave. In much the same way as you get a sonic boom when an aircraft goes overhead, it creates this shock wave, and that's the sound. Now, because the light travels at the speed of light, 300,000 kilometers a second, but sound travels much more slowly, you see the flash, and then conveyed through the air comes the rumble of the thunder, which is that shockwave of the air being superheated and expanding so quickly it cannons into all the air molecules around, causing that shockwave, which is the thunder.
All right. Thank you so much for that question, Luke. Interesting one from Nelly in Woodlands, who says, Dr. Chris Smith, apparently a study has found that deep space astronauts may be prone to erectile dysfunction. How true can this be? And why do they experience erectile dysfunction?
Hi, Nelly. I haven't come across that being a particular risk factor, although people may have been modest and not wanted to share that information. But certainly there are physiological changes from people who go into space. And one of those changes is to the blood vessels. And there's a lot of studies been done on astronauts that have spent variable lengths of time in space. And it does appear that it is bad for your blood vessels. It can age your blood vessels, and it can accelerate the process by which our blood vessels fur up or develop the disease atherosclerosis. And we know that atherosclerosis is a risk factor for erectile dysfunction. So it's possible that some people have come back from long durations in space, and they may have had their atherosclerosis accelerated, and it may have, through that mechanism, caused them to develop erectile dysfunction. Again, I'm speculating. I don't know that's the fact, but we do know that being in space for longer periods of time does have an aging effect on the blood vessel system. This may be for a range of reasons, but one reason that's been speculated is because of exposure to cosmic radiation. And it may be that the increased risk of colliding with fast-moving energetic particles has some kind of acceleratory effect on the process that underlies inflammation in the walls of blood vessels and causes them to harden and stiffen. And that may be the reason.
702.
The Naked Scientist.
We're still with the Naked Scientist, Patrick in Germiston. Patrick, hi.
Can you die of fright? There is an old saying, I nearly died of fright. What does it take?
Okay. So, doctor, can you die of fright? Is it possible that people jumping out of a burning building, for example, I actually used to hear it as well when I was younger, that they don't feel the pain because they die before they hit the ground, or impact is so great that they just feel nothing?
Hi, Patrick. Well, the bottom line is that when you experience something which is incredibly frightening, it does activate your fight or flight system in your body, which is part of your automatic nervous system. And that reaction is associated with a massive burst of adrenaline and noradrenaline, its chemical relative, which go into the bloodstream and also go onto, from nerve endings, various end organs, including your heart. Your heart responds to adrenaline and noradrenaline by increasing how hard it pumps and also how fast it pumps. And this is why when you feel very frightened or something exciting happens, you're often aware of a sensation of your heart thudding in your chest. And when you have that sensation of your heart thudding in your chest, it's your heart working really, really hard. So it is possible in some people, particularly in people who might have an underlying susceptibility to heart problems and rhythm problems, that this massive drive to beat hard and fast can push the heart rate in some people into a situation where the heart rhythm becomes unstable, and it can then run away to the extent that the person loses consciousness because their heart doesn't pump a meaningful amount of blood out anymore. It's just quivering rather than beating effectively. Or it can cause the ultimate abnormal heart rhythm. It can just stop. So yes, it is possible when you are exposed to these sorts of very frightening or very powerful stimuli. And another one is immersion in cold water. If people jump into very cold water, this has a similar effect on people, and it can cause some people to have their heart stop because of it. So you've probably seen, we've had cases where high-end athletes and footballers have appeared to suddenly collapse on the football field, for example. This is because they have an underlying problem with the heart, which means that when you drive it very hard, it can sometimes go into these abnormal rhythms. And so when you have something like a very, very frightening or very powerful stimulus, it can be sufficient to make this happen in people who probably have an underlying susceptibility to it.
Thank you so much for that question that's come through. Here's one on a voice note.
Good afternoon, Relebohile. My question for the Naked Scientist today is about looking into the past. So there was a documentary that I saw that says that technically we're looking into the past, because if you take into account the amount of time that light takes to bounce off an object into your eyes, we are looking to the past, even though it's a fraction of a second. So the scientist who was talking said that if you can increase the amount of time it takes for the light to bounce from that object to your eye, then you'll be able to look into the past. So my question is, if we can deploy that technology to look at stars, because if we look at stars, we look at them light years away, so we look at them as they were instead of as they are now, can we not use that same technology here and increase the amount of time it takes for us to look at events in the past so that we'll be able to look through some sort of a looking glass here on Earth and look at objects, but as they were in the past? So basically looking back into the past, and then maybe you'll be able to see yourself as you were however many years ago.
What an intriguing idea.
This is Reu Achille from Joburg. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Intriguing question,
isn't
it?
Sounds like we're opening a portal here.
Yes, well, the point is absolutely right, which is, first of all, in terms of our perception When you measure how long it takes us to become aware of a visual signal, so if I shine a light in someone's eyes, how quickly do they notice and are able to say, I can see that? We know it takes about 100 milliseconds for light to be filtered and processed through the retina and to then be presented to your consciousness. And we're always living in the past anyway, because if you look at when you present the stimulus to people, when their brain waves change, in other words, they're experiencing this stimulus, and then when they're actually able consciously to say what it is, it may be as much as half a second of delay between a person saying, oh, yes, now I know what's going on. So we are always living in the past anyway. So the first part of the question was about the processing mentally, and that's absolutely right. The second part of the question relates to the speed of light, which is fixed and finite in any given medium. And if we take a vacuum, for example, light is travelling, as I said earlier in the programme, about 300,000 kilometres every second. Because of that cosmic speed limit, it means if we gaze skywards and we look at a distant star, because those stars are enormous distances away from us, the light that left those stars has had to travel, because it's only doing 300,000 kilometres a second, for years and years and years to get to us. And so by the time that light arrives and we see that object in the distance, that object has now aged in the meantime all those years. Now, a closer to home example, light travels at about 1 billion kilometres an hour, to put it into simpler terms. So if we take a planet on the other side of the solar system, Pluto, that's about 6 billion kilometres away. So if a person on Pluto was tuning into 702, they would hear this phone-in 6 hours later. So you can imagine trying to do a phone-in show on Pluto to Earth. You'd have a very long wait for each question to come in and then each answer to come back. Some people would argue it'd be a better show. I don't know. I'm sure they wouldn't say that about this show. But you get the point that light travels at a finite speed, and as the distances become bigger and bigger and bigger, the time it takes the light to arrive gets longer and longer. So we are looking into the past, and when we look at the distant universe, we can see with very powerful telescopes and optics, we can see objects which haven't existed for billions of years, because the distances that the light has been travelling from them to us is billions of years old and has been traversing the universe for all that time. So you are looking back to see what that object and that patch of space looked like all that time ago. To do it in a way that would be useful to us so we could capture our own life, well, yes, if you had some way of seeing yourself and then capturing the light and slowing it down, and there are ways to do that, then you could possibly watch yourself back in the past. But that would be extraordinarily difficult to do. So at the moment, we just have to be comfortable with the fact that we can see what the surroundings out in space looked like billions of years ago, but that's about all we can do with it.
Thank you so much for that very intriguing and interesting question. Here is another one on voice note.
Hi, Lebo and Dr. Chris. The cockroach or an ant, when you drop them from top and then when they hit the ground, they don't maybe get injured or break their bones if they do have. But human beings, even if I can from a second floor, I can get injured or break my bones. Why they don't get injured? They seem to go along and crawl.
Yeah, there's an old saying, which is the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And that's both a metaphor, but also it's relevant here, which is that when you've got a big human falling on the floor, they go splat because they've got enormous amounts of momentum because we weigh a lot. And our body's tissues have to try and convert all of that kinetic energy in us falling to dissipate that and dissipate it in a way that doesn't break and bust open our tissues. Whereas something like a small insect has a lot less kinetic energy. It doesn't weigh very much. And when it hits the ground, it therefore doesn't have to transfer very much kinetic energy from itself to the ground. It doesn't have to dissipate much energy. And therefore, it's much less likely to be damaged by that fall because the tissue are sufficiently elastic that they can convert the small amount of energy the object has, because it won't fall that fast. It's got a low terminal velocity. It's got a fairly big surface area, especially if it's a flying insect. It's got a fairly big surface area, and it will slow down as it falls because the mass propelling it downwards is not that big. And whereas we have quite a small surface area relative to our mass, so we have a higher terminal velocity, we'll travel faster when we fall as well. So all these things mean that there's a difference in the amount of kinetic energy you've got to convert and how good the tissues are at getting that kinetic energy from you falling down to it turns into some heat and sound on the ground, and then you get up and scuttle off if you're an insect. You hope you haven't broken too many bones if you're a person.
Thank you so much for that question. Dr. Chris Smith, as always, a pleasure. And I have to say to the lady who sent through the voice note, people are calling her a queen and saying that she should win the Disc and Brain of 702 just for asking that question. You really inspire all of us. Continue to look out for these interesting science questions that some still don't have answers to. But then again, this show needs to continue, so we're happy about that. Dr. Chris Smith, back together Monday.
Until next time. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.